Oh, my goodness. There is so much to talk about. Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact, and this is what we're going to be talking about on this day.
The way they get me to stop talking, they'll say, "We just shut down all the roads, Mr. President. You're going to lose all the votes if you don't get in."
Wow. Two men, two world leaders. The first one you saw, I don't know if you could tell, by the way, that was Modi, the president of India. He was walking in to his hotel and people were cheering. So one man is cheered. The other one, he's tired. He's confused. Which one just said that he is the guy who runs the entire world? You're about to find out. You're about to hear it. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact. Oh, my goodness. The bad news for President Biden is now coming in droves. It's like he's drinking bad news out of a fire hydrant. You know, I mean, it's crazy. This weekend, he did an interview with a very friendly presenter, news presenter, and came off as horribly oblivious to what people are saying about him and what the actual situation is. He also, again, then lost his train of thought at an Independence Day event at the White House. He seemed to be doing fine, by the way. He started off fine. He's reading the teleprompter. He sounds good, you know, pumped up while he's reading the teleprompter. But when he decided to grab a microphone and go off the teleprompter, he made this like gibberish kind of statement that to this very moment, I can't figure out what the hell he was trying to say. And I don't think anybody else knew what he was trying to say. Here it is.
One last thing. You know, I used to think when I was a senator, there were always congestion on the highways. There's no congestion anymore. None. We go on the highway, there's no congestion. And so the way they get me to stop talking, they'll say, "We just shut down all the roads, Mr. President. You're going to lose all the votes if you don't get in."
What? What? Congestion, votes, highway, what? Anyway, it's just hard to watch. Meanwhile, the president's polls are getting worse with each passing day. The Wall Street Journal reported this weekend that 80% of Americans now believe that Mr. Biden should step down. Sorry, here I am scratching my eye. I look like Biden in the middle of a conversation. Now, look at this other Gallup poll I'm going to show you. This is from last week, by the way, showing how much more Americans don't trust Biden's age situation compared to what they thought in the past with other older American presidents. All right, here we go. Let's put that up, Marcus, if we can. All right, there it is. Americans were asked if the president is too old to remain in the presidency. First, let's look at his numbers. 67%, the poll says, too old for Joe Biden. When asked about Trump, only 37% he's too old. But now let's compare that to other presidents in the past. McCain, for example. McCain came in at 34% say he's too old. 1996, Bob Dole, 37% said he was too old. 1984, Ronald Reagan in his second round, 33%. And then 1980, Reagan in his first campaign, 23%. A far cry, obviously, from what people are saying right now. Manila, I want to bring you in. Look, the Stephanopoulos interview, the July 4th events, more Democratic senators and members of Congress are turning on the president. The polls continue to go way south on him. I mean, it's bad news on top of bad news on top of bad news. Can this guy stay in the race? What do you think?
Yeah, Rick, first, let me ask you something. In that gibberish moment that Biden went off script, was he implying that he somehow did away with traffic in America, traffic jam? That's what it sounded like.
If that's the case, he hasn't been to Miami lately, or Washington, or L.A., or any other U.S. city where I guarantee you to this day.
But remember.
Go ahead.
No, finish your thought. Finish your thought.
No, to this day, if you're an one of the things about Biden when he says something like this is disconnection, right? This guy has not had a real job in his entire life. So for him to be speaking on what it's like to be a commuter stuck in traffic is ridiculous. Like, don't even go there, dude. You know nothing about this, what the rest of us have to put up with every day.
Well, Rick, not only did in that interview with George Stephanopoulos did he claim that, at that event that he claimed he did away with traffic, but in the interview with George Stephanopoulos, he also said that he put a stop to Vladimir Putin. There was no challenge from George Stephanopoulos about what the hell he meant by that. There wasn't much pushback. But at this point, I mean, it's anybody's guess that he can be a viable actual nominee until he actually steps down himself. Nobody can actually force him out. Like we said, the rules in the books for the DNC say that the nominee has to step down. But again, when you cancel primaries, right?
Yeah.
Is this guy even really technically the nominee at this point? We don't even know.
No, you're saying something that I think this is a real truism in this case, and that is they made their bed and now they're figuring out ways to not have to lie in it. Unfortunately, they kind of have to lie there for a while. Here's another piece of video that goes exactly to what you're talking about. I'm going to show you. This one explains just how desperate these folks you're describing at the White House are to try and salvage the president's image, right? And show that he really can think on his feet. He can't. Unfortunately for them, this has backfired. So let me tell you what happened. Before the ABC interview, they scheduled several interviews with black radio station hosts, you know, people on the radio all over the country. They picked Philadelphia. However, they told the interview exactly which questions, they sent her the questions and told her which questions she had to ask so that Biden would be prepared and could rehearse his answers. Well, here's the interviewer, the radio host on CNN. Go.
The questions were sent to me for approval. I approved them.
So, did you hear what she just said? It was pretty quick. She said, yeah, they sent me the questions for approval, and I approved them. Well, then they're sending you the questions, and they're telling you what to say and what to do and what to ask. She approved them all right. In other words, she broke a fundamental rule of journalism, basically became a shill for the White House. It's dishonest. And after she said that and went on CNN and admitted that, she was fired the very next day. Manila, what do you think?
Well, Rick, in her defense, I gotta ask, we don't know all the details if her bosses were in on that. I mean, this is just in her defense of why she was fired on the surface, or did everybody try to jump in on this and say, oh, we had nothing to do with that. The whole radio station, that was just the host, that was just her. It's an isolated incident. Oh, we're not involved. But, you know, that's kind of wishy-washy. I believe that the entire mainstream media press pool is complicit in the same type of thing. We've seen for the past year, Rick, the Biden White House gives the president little note cards with the pictures of friendly reporters to call on and what the reporter is going to ask. So the same question can be applied there as well. The fundamental rules of journalism are gone here, Rick.
I know. I get your drift. And I think there's been a lot of that going. And by the way, to be fair, Trump did the same thing with Fox News. He literally would have conversations with Hannity before Hannity would interview him so they could figure out what he was going to ask him. I mean, it's ridiculous. Yeah, the whole thing is really bad. In this case, it's just bad timing for something like that, because the White House is trying to show us that this guy's perfectly fine and he can do interviews. So they schedule an interview and hand the person the questions that she wants them to be asked. And it just seems, it seems horribly silly, but your point's a good one. It's not the first time we've heard something like this has happened in the past. Remember the famous Donna Brazile case. Okay, now, you mentioned something a little while ago I want to talk about as well. You were talking about when he said this thing about Putin, right? This is also a huge global story. I don't know if you were, for the third time last night, I went and listened to the entire interview with Stephanopoulos. And there's this huge story that's playing out right now. Because I have to, I'm paid to do this. So, this is a story that's playing out in a world that Joe Biden, among others, does not understand. So this is President Modi of India arriving in Moscow at his hotel. Look at the reaction that he receives. Watch this. That's pretty cool, right? They're cheering this guy. I mean, people are like, oh, my God, Modi. I mean, he's arriving there. He's like, apparently, pretty successful president in India, if you look at the numbers, right?
So why is this important?
Let's put this in context. Two things. First, what the president said to George Stephanopoulos this weekend. Listen to this. I don't know if you caught this. Here it is, Manila. Play it, Marcus.
Everything I do, you know, not only am I campaigning, but I'm running the world.
I'm running the world. He said, I'm running the world. Biden actually seems to think that he's the president of the, not the president of the United States, but rather the president of the entire world. I mean, not only is the comment, that comment ridiculously insulting, it's incredibly disrespectful, especially to people like Mr. Modi, especially to people like other leaders who are forging new alliances like BRICS, specifically because of the hegemonic comments like the one that Mr. Biden just made. By the way, it's not just the president. Look at this story. This was published on the eve of the meeting between Presidents Putin and Modi. Look at this. Apparently, the State Department, or folks at the State Department, don't want India and Russia to be friends. And they're coming out and saying it. They're, quote, concerned about the fact that they are cooperating with each other. In fact, one State Department official actually came out and said regarding India's friendship with Russia, we will have to mitigate those engagement. What does that sound like to you, Manila? We're going to have to mitigate those engagements.
It means Vladimir Putin's a big meanie, and if you want to be my friend, you can't be friends with that guy. That's basically what, I mean, that's really, you know, the diplomatic translation to the schoolyard conversation. That's really how these children are handling world affairs that we have to suffer after the results of all of this. So look, first of all, Modi's arrival at this hotel and having hundreds of people in there gathering in the hallways to cheer him on. You would think it was like an A-list celebrity that showed up somewhere and people were trying to take photos.
He's like a little old man walking like this, right? Yeah.
But you know what? That little old man has way better approval ratings than our little old man. And he just got elected for a third consecutive term. Maybe not sweeping like he expected, but he still has better poll numbers than President Biden. And the relationship between Russia and India today has only grown in the last 2 or 3 years since Biden has been in office, especially with all the sanctions that the United States has placed on Russia. Well, guess who the beneficiary of those sanctions have been? India. They're getting a lot of cheap gas from Russia. They bypass the United States.
To my point, if Mr. Biden says he's running the entire world, well, then he isn't doing a very good job, is he? Because these countries are coming together that never would have come together in the past, and they're doing it because of the hegemonic statements that are being said by people like Joe Biden and people at the State Department. Fascinating conversation. Love you like a brother. See ya.
Sister!
Okay, like a sister. When we come back, the election results in France are in, and what we and most others expected did not come to fruition. Macron's political allies were not vanquished. Marie Le Pen's political allies did not take over the country. So what happened and why? Well, my next guest, Elijah Manier, is a veteran international war correspondent. He has unique insight into what happened in these elections. And we, with him, will be right back.
When all truths seem wrong, when all rules just don't hold, and a new world is yet to shape out, disdain becomes the etiquette, and engagement equals betrayal. When so many find themselves worlds apart, we choose to look for common ground.
Welcome back. I'm Rick Sanchez, and I'm joined now by veteran war correspondent Elijah Manier. He is good enough to join us to talk about the situation in France. I got to tell you, when I turned on the news this weekend and checked out what was going on, I was really shocked. I really thought that Le Pen and her political allies would become the new big force. And I know she did well, by the way. I'm not trying to say Marie Le Pen lost, but
She didn't do as well as she was supposed to do. Macron did not do as badly as he was supposed to do. And it seems like it's a third contingency that seems to have won the election. My question to you, sir, what happened?
Hello, Rick, and thank you for having me. So what happened is people were caught in between choosing the far right, and when they have heard them, what they were saying, the offer to the reform domestically, mm-hmm. they are presenting on the table. They were not very prepared. And this is where things started to go wrong for them. Because, for example, Jordan Bardella, who is representing the far right, said he wants to reduce retirement to the age of 60. And then when he was asked on television after the first round how he's going to manage with students who go to university and finish school at the age of 24. So how long a French can work to get to retirement age? He said 42 years. And he said, well, if the student finishes at the age of 24, then when he would retire? He said, well, 67. He said, well, how are you saying that you're going to stop at 60? And then he went to a kind of Islamophobic by saying, I'm going to ban the hijab, the halal meat, and saying that I'm going to withdraw from the EU. And all these ideas didn't add together. And people either voted blank or voted for the far right. And then they started to look, what is the less bad choice they had? And this is why Marine Le Pen, the far right, did not do very well.
Interestingly enough, I've also been reading that there may have been some Machiavellianism that took place at the last minute. Within the last week, apparently many candidates dropped out. And I've heard tell, and you could confirm this for us, that they may have been pressured to drop out, therefore not allowing the election to be diluted enough so that the Macron's people could actually do better than they would have normally not done if those candidates would have stayed in the race. Did I explain that correctly?
It's a strategy. So in French national elections, political parties sometimes choose to withdraw their candidate to support others for strategic reasons. So the maneuver is typically seen in situations where they aim to prevent a less desirable candidate or party from winning. It is described as a Republican front or Front Républicain. So preventing the extreme party from winning is a common strategy adopted against the far right or far left parties, such as the National Rally, the Rassemblement National, from winning. So mainstream parties, whether from the left or the right, might withdraw their candidate in favor of others, mainstream candidate, to ensure that an extreme candidate doesn't win. This is a strategy that was used in 2002 presidential election when many parties supported Jacques Chirac against exactly Jean-Marie Le Pen, the father of Marine Le Pen, on the second round. And also, France uses two-round system for its presidential and legislative election. So if no candidate wins on outright majority in the first round, the top two candidates go to a second round. Mm. So party might withdraw to endorse a candidate with who has a less or more better choice and chances of winning against a common opponent in the second round. So this is where coalitions start forming and withdrawing candidate in certain constituency to consolidate the support around stronger candidate from allied parties, increasing the chances of winning more seats overall. And this is exactly what happened in this election.
It seems to me, anyway, to be manipulative. I mean, when you have such sudden changes a week before an election, that usually doesn't pass the smell test, if you know what I mean. Who would have been responsible for doing this? Would this have been Macron's allies who did this?
Well, Macron's allies did that because Macron has exactly what you said, a Machiavellic plan. Because the French normally are complainers and they don't like their prime minister because he can't deliver. So Macron wanted either the far right, mainly the far right, to win, or the far left, and then they would come and offer a program that they cannot fulfill, particularly when we have today in France a hanged parliament. And a hanged parliament means nobody has a majority. And by not having the majority, the decision goes back to the president, and the prime minister needs to negotiate within most of the policy. So the president is responsible for foreign policy and defense. Now, because nobody had the majority, then Macron is taking it easy. He's going tomorrow to the US on a NATO summit. He asked Bardella, the prime minister, to continue just until he comes back. He's going to take 2 to 4 weeks to nominate a prime minister. And then this is the painful outcome is going to start, because both men will have to cohabitate, but they don't agree, and they will not agree. But then there's another point, that Macron has a possibility to dissolve the parliament after 1 year. So he has many cards in his hands that he can still play.
But the one card that he doesn't seem to be able to play is the reduction of the increasing popularity of Marine Le Pen. She did not win, you could say, arguing it from a win-loss or football game strategic viewpoint. However, she did well, and she continues to do well every time she's on the ballot, correct?
She did very well, and she did well in the European Parliament elections. And she was just about to take the lead of the country only because she did not choose a right prime minister to represent her during the first and the second round. So presenting a 28 years old who has not finished school as a prime minister who doesn't have all the answers in front of the socialists, the communists, the far left, who are really astute politicians who have all the answers, he looked extremely weak. And this is where the French were said, well, actually, on the second round, we will have another thought. But she did exactly what you said. She really did well. And then we have to see if her program in the future is going to be feasible, because the weakest point in her program is about immigration and the reduction of the age of retirement, because today in France, families have one child, a maximum two. So the first and the second generation are paying the retirement for the parents. Yeah. If reducing the retirement to the age of 60, now France will be bankrupt and is already with 3 trillion euros in deficit and in debt.
Let's talk one more thing about policy. Let's switch to foreign policy. Here in America, we like to think that we are a bunch of cowboys and ruffians, and I think the world sees us that way. Meanwhile, the French are seen as lovers, not fighters. Yet you have a president who seems to want to establish himself as a fighter, even going so far as to wanting to send troops around the world, and even going so far as to suggesting he wants to send French troops into Ukraine to fight against Russian troops. I'm just wondering if that had an effect on voters at all and what the French are thinking about that.
You're absolutely right. The French are known to be lovers, but now they are known to be losers because they've lost Burkina Faso, Mali, Niger, the African continent. They've lost in the Middle East. They no longer have a way. They've lost Europe since they have decided to go to war with Ukraine against Russia and to align themselves behind and under the U.S. umbrella. Now, Macron tried to elbow everybody saying, I'm going to send troops to Ukraine. And he was smashed by all the politicians and the people. Again, Macron was guiding and leading the way to give Ukraine 50 billion euros, i.e. $54 billion, when France's economy is on the floor, the industry is migrating to America, we don't have energy, it's 35% more expensive today. We're still buying the same energy from Russia, but through India, we pay much more for it. So we have taken in Europe all the bad decision that you can imagine, and it is a boomerang effect, and we actually shot ourselves in both foot. So it is this foreign policy that was taken by President Macron, who lost the lead and lost credibility when France came out with Germany and said Minsk 1 and 2 were a farce, and only to give the chance for Ukraine to rearm itself. So they've lost trust to be a good part in any future negotiation.
Ilana Manier, let me tell you, your ability to use concise terms and to cogently describe a situation which to many people around the world is somewhat confusing, given the way that French elections are held. Taking us through the politics right now in the country as well as the policies is magnificent. Thank you so much for doing that for us and for your time and your wisdom, sir.
Thank you, Rick. It's very kind of you. And thank you for having me.
That's our show. Remember to always look outside your own box. Truths, as we say, they don't live in boxes. I'm Rick Sanchez, and we'll look for you again next time.